Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon and happy Friday, everyone. Welcome to the USTDI Task Force. Of the members, we have Christina Caraballo, Terry O'Malley, Stephen Lane, and Brent Albert. And hopefully the others will join us soon. We do know of a couple of absent members, namely Sasha Termott and Valerie Gray. So with that, I'll hand it over to our co-chairs to get us started today. We have Christina, Terry.
Christina, I'm trying to get into the WebEx still. I'm actually logging in remotely from vacation myself. So Terry's going to kind of help lead us a little bit more. I can't see slides right now, but I know that we're going to go ahead and go through the promotion model criteria, looking specifically at the criteria requirements. So I think if we can probably see if Terry's back on and pull up the Google Doc, I think that's where we're headed today. Terry, you on?
I know Terry was on just a minute ago. We may have...
He was, and I was just texting him because I know... Hopefully he can get back in. Since I was out this week, Terry's kind of taken a lead for us. But if we can get in the Google Docs, I'm not going to be able to join the WebEx because I'm on my hotspot. But I've got the Google Doc up.
Okay, and we do have the Google Doc displayed in Adobe as well.
If you guys can kind of bear with me. What we've done is if we go to the submission sheet in the tabs in the bottom, we've basically taken the criteria of the different stages and laid it out in this in a grid saying what's in kind of stage or the level one, what's new. What's in level one, what's in level two, and this updated a little bit. I'm still trying to get into this WebEx.
And Christina, I'll let you know when Terry is back on, but I think we may have just lost the audio.
Okay, well, hopefully you'll come back in. I'm really sorry. I was kind of dialing in to stay attuned to this conversation, but Terry led us this week.
Hello?
Since I'm out. Oh, yay. You're back.
Oh.
I'm drowning.
Sorry. Yeah. My apologies. Sorry. I hit delete call instead of hitting mute, unmute. So there we go. All right. My apologies, folks. So thank you, Christina, for doing the intro. And
I don't know
can
if you
everyone
hear
me
us,
now?
Terry, but we pulled up the Google Doc. I don't know if you could hear me talking, struggling since you kind of
yep.
prepped us, but we've got the Google submission sheet up, and I was just trying to give an overview, but if you could just kick us off. That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. Can you hear me okay now?
We can. You're back.
Okay, good. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. So our work today, I thought we would go over sort of where we've been and confirm the consensus that seemed to have emerged about how we adopt the ONC model. So briefly, what we did, we created a comparison of our 2018 proposal and put it alongside of ONC's 2019 proposal. That's tab one in the Google Doc. And our consensus, it seemed, was that they lined up really well. Most everyone liked the 2019 version. thought it was much better than the 2018 version, and there were no significant omissions that I heard about. But let me pause there for a second to see if anyone had any significant omissions that we didn't pick up. Is that generally the consensus?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. Good. All right. And then what we did is we had a really detailed discussion that got us into really minute areas of how we could make this advancement process more specific. And Christina's point was to build it out as if it were a user's guide for someone who is proposing a data element. And we set that up alongside of a use case in which, and the one we ran through was smoking, tobacco use, as a way of tackling each of the different levels and each of the questions that ONC was proposing to ask in the application process and see whether we needed more detail or more specificity. And Adam came out with tab 2, which was a series of prompts asking for more specific information. So based on that, the last tab, which was the submission tab, this is the current version where we lined up in column A, is sort of any number that had been assigned to one of the items by either ONC or in Adam's second spreadsheet is in that column. And if there's a new item, for the most part, it got a new designation and was then added. And then the name of the element, the next column, was sort of what sort of value it had. Sort of how it was used, any additional comments on that. And then column E, what was required for advancement? And then finally, the appropriate level if this criterion is missing. So we tried to line it all up together. So let me stop there for a second, because this is going to be our work today, is to kind of plow through this. So let me stop, and you guys can take a quick look at this and see if it's anything is confusing.
Scroll back up to the top.
Yeah, actually, Adam, can we freeze the top row?
Yeah, that'd be helpful.
I would like to. I am not entirely sure how.
It used to be right there, right, Adam?
Yeah. I couldn't find it either, or I would have frozen it a while ago.
Oh, well.
Anyway. Maybe we'll just keep going back up to the top.
Adam, you can try the view command. Yeah, first one.
Freeze. Oh, good job.
Hey. All right.
Laura, you rock.
Thank you. Man, I couldn't find that. All right. Okay, Stephen, will that help?
It helps me. Thank you.
There you go. All right. Okay, so our job today, we're going to start on row 2. And just keep on going as long as we can. We have one more meeting after this one to get through this application form. And then we have a meeting, one more meeting where we can, I think, use that to go over our proposed presentation to the HITAC September 17th. So I think we have a meeting on the 7th. And we have a meeting at the end of this month, and then we're done. So Here we go. And please, everyone chime in. Again, the context for this is to think about this as you're a data element submitter, and this is the checklist or the questions that you're going to be asked about your data element. And whether the question for us as a group is whether we need more or fewer questions, whether they need to be phrased differently. So just anything that would make this process better. And again, chime in. You don't have to raise hands. Okay? So I'll start us off, and we're starting off with very low controversy issues, I hope. So I thought it'd be nice if we knew who is actually proposing the information and how to get in touch with them. So added that to the process. And then the next one already called out the data element name. So this, I gather, is the proposed name, the name that the proposer has attached to the data element. And with that, a data element description, which I was saying kind of meant, broadly, where does this fit? You know, is this a lab piece? Is it an observation? Is it a, how would you describe this data element? And I'm not sure, I don't know if we need at this point to have a list of sort of categories of data elements, if that would be helpful to show people, or whether we have one.
Ken? Should we have here, or I don't know if it's instructions, clarification on what's the appropriate level for a data element? So, for example, would a data element be someone's pack year history, or would it be, for example, you know, detailed smoking information, so like more like a data element group, or would it be, for example, like, you know, echo results, or would it be more like ejection fraction? Just trying to get at, because that'll likely be, oftentimes things that are requested probably will come in a package.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I may be wrong, but I thought in our initial instructions, Steve Posnack said that each data class, so if you thought about echo results as a data class containing, among others, ejection fraction, that each data class would be considered one data element at a time. And please, Adam or Al, correct me if that was a misconclusion.
That's correct. Elements would be kind of disaggregated from a full class, so you know each element would get its own submission.
So I think, Ken, that just means that if you're going to provide, but you're right. The instructions ought to read if it's a specific and clear data element provided, if it's part of a related set of data elements, and we can use your examples, but please provide the data elements in that set.
It seems like it would make sense to have a way to have things that are common across the request to not have to be repeated each time. So you can imagine, let's say you have, newborn screening results, right? And there's 15, 20 things in there. It would seem silly to recreate every single metadata, like why these things are important, unless it's like very specific to that specific result, to like have basically 20 duplicate applications.
No, good point.
So on that, I'm wondering if we need a middle tier then. So we've got we've added on line 7 the proposed data class. So we've recognized that even though a data element needs to go through the process separately, often data elements are part of a bigger data class. but within those data class, data elements could be at different levels. But for groupings, is there a middle ground that they're so similar that they are really a cluster? Do we need to add that as well to kind of find that balance?
Ask if they want to consider it as a considered, well, we have to ask what's in the data class. But we could ask if you want this to be a data class submission made up of the following data elements, and then to Ken's point, you only repeat it once. O and C in the later levels will tease it apart and make sure each data element is staying up with the group. But for the application, you're right, we should make it as simple as possible.
Yeah, and I think metadata is important too, because, so for example, if you're doing ejection fraction, do you do one for ejection fraction value, one for ejection fraction date, one for ejection fraction source, and are those three separate data elements that are proposed, or is it, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yep.
If you take it to the point of, like, depending on how you define a data element, if you define it as the smallest unit that you could break it down into, you will have a ton of data elements in that really, like, you would never really consider separate from one another.
Okay. So, Mel, that may just be the nature of the beast. How would we get around that?
I think in the form you would say, like, tell us who you are, and then for if applicable, please define a group. And the questions that relate to the group would, you know, you could put there, like, why is this group of things needed? And then you would have lower, and then it would say, please add, you know, specify the data element within this group. And you can add, you know, more within it. But it's essentially like the typical notion of if there's natural groupings to things, it doesn't really make sense for you to repeat it each time. I guess it'd be like if you were booking a flight and you could only book in one-way segments and you have to re-enter all your information, your birth date and your TSA number every single time. And that's just the way, like, that would be a very silly information form, but that's almost what we're asking for here.
Okay, that's excellent comments. So other folks, I'm taking Ken that is a proposal for a modification, an amendment. So does that sound fine to everyone else? Make sense? Raise other concerns?
Sounds
maybe
good.
Another thought, too, is maybe we define it like if you don't need to, at a data element level, you don't need to disambiguate further if you would never really see these data elements apart. That might be another way to think about it. Just being careful about things like, you know, if we consider, again, ejection fraction, like, to what level do we go down, right? Like, and we might just want to have examples, but maybe, you know, it's a given that you would assume date, time of its being observed is there and, you know, potentially, like, I don't know, but things that you wouldn't otherwise separate out. I think we assume things, right? Like, we assume if you have a lab that the value is going to be there and that the units and the actual numeric value or text value are all part of one data element, but having a definition that basically makes it clear what should be the unit of a data element, I think will be important because, so anyway. And there may be some assumptions we put in, like, hey, if you're asking for data, you don't have to specify, you know, the time that it was captured is relevant. And if it's unless it's something that's, you know, timeless, like, I don't know. Well, I don't know if there are timeless things, but unless it's something where it explicitly doesn't need a date time associated with it, let's say a birth date, right? Like a birth date field doesn't need a time observed probably associated with it. But Otherwise, like, I think as a someone who's writing it, you'd be wondering, like, do I need to specify that I need to know, you know, when it was actually recorded? Or when the observation was from?
Okay. And I think you're on safe ground assuming that the metadata is going to be there, sort of, you know, author's organization and time.
And I think those are maybe, well, I'm not sure about the author part, but maybe those are some examples that need to be specified in the instructions, right? Like,
okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, good idea. That sounds fine. Okay. And the next new line 6, if I can read it right, was in a way asking the proposer to search this database for similar data elements, in a sense to do a little homework for ONC, because that's what, that I presume is what ONC is going to do. They're going to see if there's anything else already in the data set that looks similar. And then really ask, if there is, then why is this different?
Or you could say, or please provide additional data in support of this, right? You can imagine somebody might have said, hey, this ejection fraction is important for this reason, and you found it, and you as an organization might want to say, looking at this, this all looks good, but, you know, this is another reason. Or so maybe it's like saying, what else do you want to add to this, this, you know what I'm saying? Like, I guess if it was like a legal thing, it'd be like a, what is it, like a friendly brief or something. Just because somebody else put in an argument doesn't necessarily mean that that means you have nothing else to say about it.
Right. So you really, but it's probably a one-way comment. You probably would add things to that data class, that cluster of data elements.
Or you may comment that it's not properly specified, or there might be all sorts of comments about it, right?
Yeah.
And right. We probably want to, or you might just say, like, I don't think it's well specified, so I'm going to put in this one. Like, you don't want
right.
it to be, like, just because somebody put in a poorly written proposal for the data that you care about, that now you're stuck and unable to, you know, put more information that you think is important.
And I think that raises sort of maybe the next column over, Adam, is sort of an issue of what is ONC going to have to do to manage this database? And that's going to be one of the things they have to do, is to sort of harmonize proposed data elements, aggregate them, clarify them, make sure they're specified properly. All right, so there's going to be some editing that ONC will need to do. And the question is, is this application form going to give them enough information to help that task? Anyway, that's aside. We can come back to that one. But thanks, Ken. So where are we now? Down to 7. So this is sort of line 10, item 2 is the proposer's pitch for why this is important, why it should be a national exchange. Didn't see any problem with that one. And 2A was a question of use cases. And 2A gets you now as being the first requirement for being thought of as being a level 1 data element. And if that characteristic is not present, it means that the level of the data element is the comment level. So if you have it, it's necessary but not sufficient to get you in level one. If you don't have it, you're not getting into level one no matter what else you have.
I really like the way you've organized this, Terry, and populated the table. Thank you for that.
You're very welcome. It was your idea. Okay, so that makes, again, we'll just kind of go through these, and if you have something to say about them, that, you know, interrupt, and we'll stop and clarify it. Okay? So 2B, line 12, again, a list of projects that are currently underway using this or proposing to use this data element.
That's a little bit different from what's stated there, where you say to define use cases, right?
I'm sorry, where are we?
Your row 12.
Line 12. Okay. Okay. Right. I'm having trouble reading, so I may not be reading it right. So,
as written, it says to projects to define the use case. If what you intend more is projects to sort of pilot the use case, or to, you know, underway related to the use cases, but defining to me says, like, is there a project to write down on paper what this use case is? And so if that's not the intent, I think it needs to be specified.
No, good point. And Adam, can you go back to your prompts tab and see what we have in 2B, because I may have just misquoted it. Maybe go up a row or two. And some of these, the new elements in the submission tab, some of them are just a breaking apart of these the previous ones in the prompts tab. So I was just looking to see how I got what Ken was concerned about. It looks like I probably just miswrote it. So, okay, let's go back to submission, and it's basically then, site projects currently underway, you know, using this data element. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because it's really what we want to know is just sort of, you know, does anyone care about it and is anyone using it?
And does it need to be being used in, say, a fire implementation? So take an example,
no.
Right? Okay.
Yeah,
so in the case of heart failure, if it's just, hey, in our health system, if the patient's ejection fraction is this, then we call them to make sure that, you know, they're doing okay or whatever, right? Like, that's okay. It doesn't have to use fire.
Right. In fact, I think this needs to be sort of transport agnostic. It's just, you know, it's about the data element itself and not, how it's being exchanged.
I guess by that definition, if we go to, like, then a lot of things might be in level 2, like evidence of impact use. So, for example, like with ejection fraction, for example, if somebody can say, yeah, we do care management based on ejection fraction and they do better when we do it, does that mean, like, if it can be documented, it's already right up at level 2?
Everything you need, you have to have everything you need to get into the level.
There's more things than that. Okay.
Yeah. So, if, you know, there are 5 or 6 things you need for level 1. There's 3 or 4 things for level 2. So if you've got all of them, then
got it. Okay.
Then you can go there. But it gets tougher as you go along.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, but that's a good clarification. Thank you. And then 13 is is it currently being captured in any system? And really, and I guess the, should we be asking them, all right, so we do ask them, all right. So is it being captured, yes, no? If it's yes, then tell us. No. What sites, what's used? And again, this information is to help ONC make the leveling decision.
And again, okay. just to be clear, a lot of things will not meet level one, and the assumption is if it doesn't meet level one, if ONC has a desire to promote things to make it to level one, they would help out, right?
Well, that's a good question. That's another, you know, question for the ages at some point. I don't think it's that clear to me yet what, if any, role ONC will have in, you know, quote, helping out data elements in their advancement process.
I think this is where it's important that that there's mechanisms for things that fail to advance to the next class. There's information that helps identify which should be prioritized for helping, you know, to move to the next step.
Yeah, and Adam, can you capture those Ken's comments? I think you're right. They kind of go, it's whether or not this whole process will work the way it's intended.
Yeah.
And so part of it, you know, some data elements are going to make it through with not much help, but you're right. Some are likely to, some may need help.
Just thinking
and then
of
the
like,
question is,
like the people based on this questionnaire, the only people who are going to be able to fill it out are people who are basically in health IT, right? That's the way it's set up. So if you ask like a patient advocacy group, if they say, you know, we really need to know whether, you know, patients are homeless, let's say, right? And they're the one putting it in. And then they get the like question 15 or question 14, do current systems, electronic systems track it? Question 15, does a current standard on implementing guide exist? Like, they're going to have no clue how to fill that out. Maybe it's okay, but the way these forms are structured, it is basically implying that the only people who are allowed to submit these things are people who are in health IT or can get in touch with people who are in health IT.
Okay, so we should make, you know, that may be the conclusion that you could safely draw from this, but that's not what's intended. I think the intent is that anyone can submit, you know, so you can get up to row 14 without any IT being involved. It's just that you think this is good. The question is, that you raised earlier, is then how do you advance? You know, how do you begin to acquire the characteristics that you need to get to the next, to level one? And that's a, you know, that's an important question and one we ought to come back to.
Yeah.
But you can be an advocacy group and make your proposals and, you know, tell people why it's important. And you have a project locally that you're doing that's not HIT. So you could, you know, you can get up to this level. You can get well into the comment box.
And I think that's where perhaps the place where we need to flesh out more is the what's the value proposition for this data part. Because as it currently stands, it's mostly free text, right? Which means
yep.
If you get, and it depends on how many you get. Maybe like this is going to be like one of those places people don't really know is there. And the only people who actually submit things are people kind of in the know, and your ONC is going to get like maybe 50 to 100 proposals in a year, in which case it's totally reasonable and totally fine, right? Like you don't really need a particular process. But if you end up getting like 1,000 of these, it's going to be really hard to judge which one should be prioritized. And that's where I wonder if there's, I don't know, if there's a way to quantify it a little bit more, like, you know, that would allow for sorting or ranking or I don't know, like what's the, I mean, it gets very technical, of course, but like big picture as a society, we might be thinking of are things like, what's the quality adjusted life year saving potential here if this could be, you know, implemented, that kind of thing. Because otherwise it's really just going to be come down to how articulately can people make a case or create a story around it, which it would be very hard, right? because the judges at the ONC are not going to be experts in every single domain that people are commenting on. There will be no common rubric for which to judge. You know, maybe that's okay, if especially if they're, ONC is not, or a group isn't intended to identify the most promising things that need to be pushed forward. And if it's more like, hey, here's a place, if you're interested, look here and see if you want to work with these people. But if there is an intent to say, let's identify some prioritization where we put some resources, other than having people on staff literally reading through, like, you know, all of them and then making arbitrary, probably, you know, decisions based on that, then there probably needs to be some way to be able to better quantify that. I don't know.
Yeah. So there's another good point, Ken, and there's another series of questions that were left for final advancement in the USCDI that touch on those. So we might want to ask whether we should move those up earlier in the process, in the application process. So Adam, if you go scroll right down to the end. There you go. And we can just sort of go from the bottom up. So right, maybe one more row. Yeah, so sort of 16. So, you know, how many people are going to do it? Is something making it hard to do? You know, if we ask, these are the things that the high tech is going to wrestle with and make suggestions to Dr. Rucker. And the ultimate decision of whether something gets into USCDI is going to happen at that level. But,
you know, that's a great point. Maybe the common thread is, say, USCDI task force, right, reviews the applications, and we have some sort of metric that's transparent that says what's the likely clinical impact, what's the likely financial impact, that kind of thing.
So I don't think it's been determined that our task force is going to be functionally involved in this process. Adam, maybe, or you, the co-chairs, perhaps you have a different perspective. So far, all I've really sensed is that we're here to help inform the design of the process as opposed to necessarily be involved in helping to manage or support the process once it gets going. I'd love it. I'd love the latter to be true, but I haven't heard that we're being assigned to do that.
Yeah, I would love to hear who is going to actually adjudicate these.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be us, but to Stephen's point. But someone, you know, someone will have to. And I think we had a section in a previous document about how are priorities being set, who sets them, and then how do we know whether the data, proposed data elements are addressing, and are there gaps in what's needed versus what's being proposed?
Remember that in the draft promotion model, the HITECH does have a role, and once the data element has been assigned to level 2 by ONC, the HITECH is tapped to review all the data elements in level 2, and that's per the draft right now. So maybe we look at that and add a process for some of the new ones coming in, because every call we kind of come back to this, like, how do we bridge the gap between the really technical and kind of the advocacy groups that really need data but can't fill out this form, and we need all this information in this form for a data element. So I feel like it's kind of a yo-yo.
Yeah, how about if we move, I mean, this is sort of the second move, because these elements used to be earlier and then they got pushed them back later. But maybe they really belong, to Ken's point, how do you make the case for this as a national data element. It's because it adds value, and here are the following ways it adds value. Maybe we push that up early so people can make the case to the extent they know it early. We don't have to ask them for, this asks for some explicit evidence later on. Maybe we leave them in both places. Mm-hmm. This one, we really want the data in these latter stages. But in the earlier stage, we're really interested in sort of someone's opinion about the significance rather than the documented significance. Let them make
it. And in terms of the promotion, I think it really comes down to who has resources to make this happen.
Yeah.
And so, for example, in the current way this works, right, the people who have resources is essentially the EHR vendors for the most part. So it's like the Argonaut project, right? So if they decide that something is worthwhile because, you know, of their inputs or, you know, inputs from their clients, then it can, you know, it proceeds through that's one potential lever, right? Another is if the government says, hey, this is needed, although we're really moving more towards, like, let's not, and it's probably a good thing, let's not, like, propose something unless it's already there or it's already been really proven out. Historically, ONC has also done things where they facilitated public-private partnerships to define things in areas of need and to pilot them. But I guess having this process so that those groups have a way to sort of digest this, I think would be good. So, for example, if this was in a very well digestible form, I would imagine like initiatives like Argonaut could find that useful, where they say, hey, like, here's a concise summary of the things that look like most promising. Should we just take a look to see if we missed something? Or ONC could say, hey, we're going to do efforts to facilitate moving forward on things, kind of like the prior auth kind of example, and get ideas, right? So whatever can be done to facilitate that process, I think would be useful. In terms of HITACH and HITACH task forces, it seems a reasonable place for ONC to put some, process to get guidance there. But if the preference is, you know what, ONC staff would prefer to just do this on their own without input from HITACH or HITACH task forces until it's ready for level two, that would be another decision. I mean, it does seem a lot of it does depend on to what level of, you know, submissions we get to. Like, if it's high level, sort of, you know, should we decide between these 30 data elements, HITACH would probably be fine. If it's, you know, we need to sort through 1,000 proposals, that's another thing.
Right. Okay, well, it sounds like we are slowly building another section of sort of issues that need to be addressed in standing up this process. So we will keep building that file. So I guess, are there any objections to me sort of taking a less data critical rewrite of these last data points and putting them earlier? So just in a sense to let the proposer make the case for why this is valuable and should be national exchange. And then save the same questions later on, but require, because ONC is going to need it, require citing of the data. That make sense, or should we just leave them one place or another?
I think that makes sense. And I think having it in both places is good. It gives you a chance at the beginning to just kind of do the written more prose, and then down later try to collect as much of the technical information as you can. But it'll also give ONC more information and kind of like a case for data elements that are being proposed more from advocacy groups, if they have the opportunity to add a little bit more flavor in there.
Okay. All right. Okay, so Adam, where did we before that detour, how far have we gotten? Somewhere around here, yeah. All right, right. So we're asking if it was currently captured in an electronic system. And we're not saying what constitutes an electronic system. Does that need to have more definition, or will people...
This is a tricky one, right? Like, if you're in a health system, for example, and let's, take, like, structured ejection fraction as an example, right? Maybe you know that in your system, it's widely available, and it's just there. But how is anybody going to comment if, say, you weren't like an industry representative or have access to people from multiple EHR systems? How are you going to say like it's prevalent beyond us? So anyway, just it's important information. I guess I'm just pointing out that like these are going to be hard questions to answer without a fairly robust network of people and resources you can rely on. So anyway, maybe it's intended to be that way, but I guess I'm just assuming most things are going to be stuck in comment.
I think this is a area that we should discuss. I see Rita has a question in the public chat that says, does systems that capture data elements specify EHR vendors and or healthcare organizations? And I can't remember where we had the conversation, Terry, but it kind of had me thinking. I was thinking it doesn't matter where it's captured because sometimes it might be outside of a healthcare system or an EHR where data is captured, such as on a mobile app. But then we have to think about how that data may be captured outside of the traditional ecosystem comes into current ecosystems. And if we don't also always consider kind of the connection between the two, then we could run a risk of creating almost data gaps of information where you think that things are being shared, but they're not because that core EHR isn't able to take in all the data and then you lose some. So I've kind of can argue both sides here, but I think it is important to think through.
Yeah. I understood my interpretation of this question was getting to the issue of feasibility of capture. Has somebody actually done it? Or are they doing it? And if they are, then that's sort of a gold star for that data element. I'm just wondering if that's the right question to ask or whether it advances the data element sufficiently. So if it's not being captured, or what's the value add of being able to cite the fact that it's already being captured?
I think it's so that you can say that the work effort would be in making that data available rather than having people,
yep,
in particular clinicians, enter the data anew.
Thank you. Well put. Okay. So it's right. It's making it available rather than acquiring. Okay. So I think that's an important element, item to ask. Presumably, if you can capture it, then it's not as big a step to share it or making it available. So if you know of them, then the next 3A just asks you to give some detail. How often is it, and is this widespread? Is this one system? So it just, again, to get a sense of sort of how robust this process is. Again, I'm trying to think, is this going to help ONC in the task of deciding where to put a data element?
I would think so, right? Like, if now getting this information would be hard, but if you can say we queried the EHR association and, you know, among respondents, 90% of the responding EHR system said they capture, you know, ejection fraction in a structured form, that would probably be a big deal. Now, the question, of course, is like, not many people are going to have access to, say, an EHR association, right? You know, not many folks are going to have a direct line of communication with, like, with that kind of a group or Argonaut. So, again, I think the questions are good, and it's probably the right ones to have. I'm just bringing up the issue that getting to the level of even being able to answer these is going to be beyond many, many groups, even beyond, you know, individual large health systems.
Yep. Now, I agree, and to a certain extent, though, Ken, that's the point as well. I mean, it's the process to technological specificity and consistency and reliability that this whole process is going to rest on. If the
yeah.
data element is garbage by the time it gets through this, no matter how good it is, how wonderful the concept is, how valuable the concept is, it's not going to make exchange any better.
But there may be cases where it, in fact, is being captured consistently and structured, but you just don't have the resources to learn that. So, again,
yeah.
I mean, it's the kind of thing of, like, how do we imagine that people are going to get that data? So, so I'll give another example, like, you know, whether it's, you know, ejection fraction or whether it's the QT interval on an EKG in a structured form, or it's the pack years of a patient's smoking history, or let's say, you know, a baby's gestational age. These are all examples of the kinds of things we're thinking about for different things we're working on. And the question is, you know, how does a group even find out, right, whether, for example, you know, how prevalent pack year history is in terms of collection across EHR systems? Like, that alone seems like it would be a major effort, it does seem like the kind of thing where if, for example, ONC could create sort of a network of even, like, health systems or, you know, among people who are using different EHR systems to be able to answer, yep, in my health system, we do capture, you know, ejection fraction, and it is in a structured form. Like, and queries can go out to them, right? Whether it's volunteer-wise or just, you know, paying them a little bit of money to answer questions. Like, those are the kind of things that I think would be immensely valuable for something like this, but I think we do have to think about the question of, like, how does these questions actually get answered?
Yep. But Adam, I put Ken's comments in another column that says, no, right. How is ONC going to get the information needed to adjudicate or to even identify whether the answer is correctly stated? And it would be nice if there is some broadly knowledgeable group who is consistently reviewing the applications and augmenting the data where the answer was known. Something like that. You know, again, Ken, it's a critical piece.
Yeah, and in terms of a coordination role of an Office of a National Coordinator, right, like setting something like this up seems like it'd be really important. Like, it would be the natural body to do something like, even if it was volunteer-wise, right? Like, please volunteer for this, you know, email list or whatever that, just asks you, do you guys collect this, and is it in structured form? You know, it's very hard for people who are not in those situations to answer, very easy for the people who are in those situations to answer. So that's where I think just coordination can do it, right? Like anyone who practices in a health system is, let's say in primary care, is going to know if, you know, certain things are true or not true, right? So anyway.
Yeah. All right. You know, again, this, you know, and I think all of these answers in this discussion are well within our purview as this task force. And this sort of this application form is making us think about the details involved and the implications of asking these questions for the advancement process. So I think it's doing its job. So good work. Okay. And then, and again, Ken, the next questions just get progressively more technical, all right? And so the people who know the answers to them is going to be progressively narrowed. And the issue you raised applies to all of these.
Yeah. It might be kind of a, I can imagine you might even have a process that ONC coordinates where, like, the applicant can pay, like, $1,000 and have, you know, this investigation done for them, or I don't know. And maybe it's volunteer-driven, but you can imagine that oftentimes it's easy. I don't know. And maybe it's an application fee. Who knows? But yeah. This question 4 about content standards, do we need to clarify that, for example, it needs to be U.S. standards or applicable in U.S. standards, or say must be, you know, do we want it specifically around fire, those kind of things. So, for example, if there's a HL7 version 2 standard on it, if there's a CDA standard on it, if there's a open air standard out of Europe on it, like, so, for example, if there's an open air standard around something we care about but not in the U.S., does that count? Because we don't implement open air standards there, but here, but you know, that is a standard. So we might want to clarify a little bit more about, you know, what standards are we really talking about here.
Yeah, and the other point someone made somewhere was that we also should be standards agnostic. In other words, you know, whether it's HL7, CCDA, FHIR, IEEE, doesn't matter. It's as much as the fact that there is a set of standards that can be pointed to. But you're right. You know, should it just say U.S. realm?
Yeah, and for example, is it being in LOINC sufficient, for example? Because one easy way to get into here, if that for that required criterion, would be to propose it to LOINC and see if they can get it incorporated in, you know, the next 6 months, and maybe that is okay. But if we do have an ONC in particular has something very specific in mind, then it should probably be clarified. You know, say like, you know, examples of things that would, you know, be very beneficial here are in order things like FHIR, you know, CCDA, that kind of thing. But yeah, specifically the, you know, maybe it's like standards that are used in the U.S. or something, because,
okay.
Yeah.
No, that certainly makes sense. And then, again, as we're getting some of the questions, once we get beyond 4A, so we ask for links to current standards. Now, is that appropriate? Can we just do that rather than ask people to cite them?
Say, yeah, I think links sound good.
Point and go. Right. Okay. And 5, these are just sort of levels of technical maturity.
I think that's good. Just one question and issue that I recently learned. Apparently the term connectathon is trademarked by Oracle. So
no way. Seriously?
Yeah, we ran into this for our AHRQ Learning Network. conference we're trying to hold with the Connectathon,
jeez,
where apparently there was experience before that they've been warned that they can't use the term. ONC might want to check into like whether they should avoid referencing Connectathon without getting. Anyway, I looked on the trademark office. Connectathon is registered by Oracle.
Interesting. All right. So maybe we're just having testing, pilots, or production interrupt.
Yeah, something like that.
I've heard that too. Another term can be plug test.
Plug test.
Ouch.
Yeah. That's a Connectathon.
Right. Use it anyway. No, I didn't say that.
Okay. Good to know, Ken. So we'll just modify that. I mean, the point is, you know, is it out there and are people trying to push it forward by testing it? We'll find a good name for it. And then cite the links. Now, number six, you know, are there binding definitions? Which is what this question, and I don't know the answer. Is binding definition, is that term of art? Is that well understood what that means? I didn't understand what it meant. Or if it had a technical definition.
I assume binding definition is talking about terminology binding, but it's really unclear.
I didn't know what it meant. So.
And it's just, I think it's just a subset of the standards. So I think you can just get rid of this, right? So binding is typically used in the concept of, let's say, if you have, you know, the fire observation, lab observation standard, the code is bound to LOINC and says you must use a LOINC code here. That's what binding usually means. But by pointing to the standard that says you use LOINC, it's already part of that standard or spec. And if it's not specified, I guess another way to say it is, like, of course, you want as tight binding as you can. That relates to, like, that's more getting at the question of how actually semantically interoperable are these standards. So another example might be, you know, for the fire US score medication kind of standards, I believe the route of medication is not standard in US score. So you could use any local terminology to say this is like an IV medication versus an oral medication, et cetera. Like, that is literally what's in our current standards that I think ONC is referring to, or at least it was until recently. That might have gotten fixed. I don't know. But the issue here is, like, you know, that's more a way of judging how mature the standard is, right? Like, because you could have a standard like current procedures where you can say, you could have a standard that basically says, like, hey, you know, send procedures around, and you can use any code you want, including local codes. Or you could have one that says, hey, you send around, but you must bind to SNOMED code if it's available and it's relevant. And those are very different levels of interoperability, right? But I'm not sure this is the kind of thing that, I mean, it's just part of what you need to sort of evaluate. And it has various implications. Like, even from the burden perspective, just saying, hey, make all your procedures available through an API, and it's okay if you don't encode it, that's one thing. If you say everything must be mapped to SNOMED if there's a relevant SNOMED code, that assuming it's not already done, that's a pretty monumental task, right, where you take tens of thousands of orderables in your system and you start mapping them. So I guess all that's to say, like, I don't like the binding question, but it's probably getting at this notion of, like, you know, how tight is the specification? Like, how much room is there for, but I'm not sure you want the submitter to necessarily talk about that, right? Like, yep. It's really getting at the issue of, like, are two implementers of the same standard potentially going to be able to talk to one another or not in a semantically interoperable fashion.
Okay. And I can see in the chat, Rita and Rob have both put things in. So thank you both. We'll we will amend things accordingly. So Rob just saying, are there specific standard terminologies that are known?
Which, yeah, that's good. Are there, yeah.
Nice way to
Rob, say it. Rob's great, yeah.
Yep. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Rita. We'll go back. All right. We're making great progress, by the way, team. We had set 5 as our goal, so we're cranking along here. Okay. So then we get to so 6 is the first one that's actually required for level 2, which we just answered, and then we'll send links. And 7 is the next requirement for level 2, and that has been tested in 2 or more unrelated systems. And the question that people have raised is 2 systems too many, not enough? And is unrelated clear? What do we mean by unrelated?
Yeah, we need to specify that.
So unrelated probably means it should be on a different platform.
Because
we don't really care if it's owned by the same people. You know, it may be related through ownership, but technically unrelated.
Yeah, I think that's what we were driving towards. It certainly sets a higher bar, but it does seem more relevant. I mean, to show that Athena can do it with Athena doesn't really get us where we want to be.
And in some cases, for example, for Fire APIs that's not meant for cross-institutional interchange, we just need to make clear, like in certain use cases, it's not necessarily that you can transfer data from health system A to health system B that's important. It's that in both health system A and health system B, you can, in fact, pull the data.
So is the term systems correct? Or
how
should
about
that
if we
be
just say at least two different EHR systems and just stop there?
That doesn't get at the multiple vendor issue. Directly.
Two distinct EHR vendor systems. Although that might bias. So let's just be clear. Like,
yeah, that's fair.
If OpenMRS supports it, is that sufficient to count as one, or does it need to be commercial?
Okay. And Bob's saying it shouldn't be the defining.
Thanks.
Don't focus solely on.
Do we need to say vendor? Is there another term other than vendor? HR. How about
developer?
Two distinct HR platforms.
Yeah, I mean, we know what it means. I'm just not sure everyone else will.
Yeah. And I guess we need to give a sense of like our. Are we going to specifically weight commercial systems or not? I think that's a question.
Yeah, I don't think it has to be commercial. I mean, I think, you know, we want to empower government agencies, VA, DOD, you know, et cetera.
And Rob has a comment of, do you want to restrict the EHR? I don't know.
You just want to say unrelated parties? Because, you know, because that would, you know, registries different from EHRs.
Well, I guess that's where it gets down into the details, right? Like, if we're just trying to get information, asking people to say, you know, okay, describe further is fine. Now the question is, for example, if no EHR is supported, but let's say, you know, the cardiology registry supports it and the American College of Surgeons registry supports it, is that sufficient to say it should move to level two? Is there any, was the promotion criteria to level two, can we review that? And what level was it previously HITECH approved? Just trying to, or is there a statutory language that requires it to meet a certain threshold?
Oh, good question. I don't know about whether it's statutory or not.
I think the idea, though, is that in the end, the implication of things making it to a certain criteria level is that we make it required as a part of EHR certification criteria, right? Like, that's sort of the end result. Is that not right? Like, once it gets to a certain point, the anticipation is future rules would say now everyone has to be at this version of the standards by, you know, like 3 years from now, and it gets incorporated into the US CDI and the US fire profiles.
Yep.
So from that perspective, then maybe the focus should be EHR systems, and I think Rob made a note that what he's referring to is that maybe the EHR system is connecting to a clinical registry. But I still think, like, for example, one EHR vendor system connecting with two different registries using the standard isn't the same thing as two different EHR systems connecting with, you know, an outside party or an app or something like that. So could we just say, has the exchange of this data then been successfully tested by at least two distinct EHR platform systems? And there's nothing in there that says it can't be with like a registry.
And distinct really means different, unrelated.
Different, yeah, different is fine, I think. Unrelated, I'd be a little bit careful about, because what if there's consolidation and, like, EHR, you know, like an EHR vendor, two used to be completely different and now they're owned by the same entity? And we've had certain examples of that in recent years, right? And is it no longer count because those two EHR systems are owned by the same entity now?
Yeah. I mean, we're almost asking is this data element sufficiently robust that systems that handle it differently don't alter the outcome?
Agreed, just with the caveat that if we're looking at bi-directional transformation, like the data can be sent from system A to system B and returned to system A and it'll look exactly the same, that is not what we're asking here, right? That's a higher level bar, and I think it's appropriate not to go down to that level.
All right, and I think... All right. Okay. There we go. So Rob says to say two different types of systems. Thank you, and let ONC figure it out. Yay. That's my approach. Okay. And I think Lauren, are we getting close to public comment time?
We have about four or five minutes.
Okay. Then we'll keep on plugging through.
I agree that 7A links are not what we want. It should be please provide links or other information to supporting data, right? Because we're asking, it's not really, well, I guess we call it artifacts, but essentially we're just asking, like, yeah, tell us about this, right? And unless they've already written it up somewhere, it's probably going to be just description, like, hey, you know, we did this pilot for, in this, you know, or and in this pilot, EHRA was involved and we did this, and, you know, we also involved EHRB and we did this and we found that it works. I mean, that's probably not going to be a link.
And
maybe it's like when we ask for more details, maybe it can be generically for those. It just please provide, you know, details, and then it says parentheses, or like, you know, if this has been described elsewhere, you may refer to it through reference or something, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay. And line item number 8 is, this is the first one that's required to get into USCDI. So this one says 4 unrelated systems or more.
And maybe that's, I mean, it's the same thing, it just the 2 became a 4.
Yep.
So I think we just use that different terminology. Now, there may be implications, and maybe I guess part of the question is, do we treat meeting these criteria as an automatic in, or are we just saying it's a minimum bar? I'm interpreting it as a minimum bar, but if the interpretation is like, if you check all these, you must make it to the next level, that's different. So I'm assuming it's a minimum bar, right?
It's a minimum bar because also, I mean, you need to be considered for USCDI. You have to get over these minimum bars.
Yep. Yep.
Whether you make it into CDI is up to HITAC and ONC.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, okay, good. And so we'll rewrite 8A, 8 and 8A the same as we did 7, 7A.
Yeah.
All right. And then, does formal published documentation exist for its representation and exchange?
Isn't that basically the same as when we asked for the standards before, except it's now saying it's formal, whatever that means? Because obviously it's published if we referred to it before, right?
Well, just why I asked, what is it? So,
I think this is getting at, like, do you at least have, like, a standard for trial use, formal standard development organization standard or something.
Do you have formal published documentation such as a,
I mean, I assume we're not going to want to take something to level 2, sorry, for USCDI, unless it's an actual standard, right? Like, just
right.
Because your organization came up with a spec that, you know, 4 groups worked on this, I'm just assuming that we're not going to do that. I could be mistaken, but then I think what we're saying, is there a standard, at least in a, you know, draft standard state, published by a accredited standards development organization? Unless the intent is different, I think that's what they're after, but anyway, ONC can clarify if that's not what they mean.
That's correct. This is intended as, like, for example, has it gone through a ballot cycle at HL7 and received comments, that kind of thing.
Cool. All right. So Lauren's got the slide up for public comments. Let's cut the public comments.
Great. Can we open the public line?
If you would like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And operator, do we have any comments in the queue?
There are no comments at this time.
Okay. Terry, Christina, I'll let you know if we get any other comments over the phone.
No, that's great. Thank you. So, Adam, can we go back to your – we're pretty close to the end here.
Could we then consider updating number 14 to – does has a at least a draft standard been published by standards development organizations such as HL7, NCPDP, et cetera. Whatever makes, I guess it just maybe ONC Adam could just specify it the way you intended it. Yeah.
Okay, and then the rest, so I mean, once you get beyond the technical stuff, then, you know, then it's really, you know, I just said it's strategic value, so basically significance to the country, whether that's meeting the quadruple aim or, you know, whatever it is, national security, cyber peace.
I like the quadruple aim, Terry. Maybe we should explicitly just say, you know, around that. So improve patient outcomes. What is it?
Health of populations.
Health of populations.
Personal health. Cost of care.
And provider satisfaction, or, you know, that kind of thing, I think. And I think there's something to be said for something that, you know, makes providers not burned out and such.
Absolutely.
I mean, such as the EHRs? Right. Okay. I saw a cartoon, two doctors together, one saying, have you seen the new ICD-10 code for carpal tunnel derived from using overuse of an EHR? Thought it nicely captured two favorite things.
I think this is good. The cost one's going to be a little bit tricky because, and I guess for all these, maybe we need to add this notion of, can you specify the stakeholder group to whom this benefit accrues? And so both for the benefit and the cost, I think it's important to maybe sort of have people explain from what perspectives they're talking about. So,
right.
'Cause we have all sorts of perverse incentives, right? Like maybe in the current environment, let's say, you know, getting people to do more expensive imaging is bad for the patient, bad for the society, but good for the, you know, radiology group, or, you know, like there's all sorts of,
yep.
So I think we just need very high specificity on whose perspective are you talking about from here.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, especially given the fact that costs and benefits don't move in parallel. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, team, great job. And
should we add a requirement that in all cases you need to include a patient perspective? Just a thought. I mean, or maybe you're encouraged. It just seems like, or maybe we just say, like, please comment from each of these perspectives. You know, NA not known is sufficient, perhaps. But, like, we should probably just prompt, like, okay, can you think of it from the perspective of the patient, from the perspective of society / the, you know, overall economy, perspective from a healthcare provider under capitation, perspective. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's maybe even it's just instructions that you may want to consider describing in these terms, whatnot. But I think many times we don't actually think of it in those terms, and it's not explicit, and we sort of have to tease it out after the fact. Like, what did they actually mean here when it says it's going to be good financially?
Yeah, well, maybe that's another good point. And so maybe, as you say, we ask explicitly. I don't think we want to run down a big, long list.
Yeah.
But certainly the patients, the benefits of patients, and maybe it's benefits to patients, providers, and society.
Do we want to include insurers? Just noting they're a major part of
the
health.
Yeah, I mean, stakeholders, right? I mean, we don't want to be exclusive.
Okay, other stakeholders in society.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. All right. Yeah, we'll put that one in early. That'll be like a row 2A or B or C somewhere. Okay, so what we'll do is we'll turn this around, get it back out to everyone so they can look at it for a while, and then we'll see what we do in the next 2 weeks. Great.
Great work.
Outstanding job.
Good job, Terry.
Ken, Stephen, thank you all. Rob, thank you, as always. Are adjourned.
Okay, we'll adjourn. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.